Scene 18. Anonymous, 9 p.m. There was enough light from a lamp half hidden by the fresh new tree leaves to show me her face, and enough darkness to make it look very desirable. It seemed to me perfectly natural to kiss her. Why else had I come into the park? Why else was she here? Yet somehow I lacked the self-assurance I generally had on such occasions. There are body signals one recognizes. With experience and a certain amount of common sense at the game, one knows what is welcome and what is not, and how far to go without suffering the humiliation of rejections, or the greater humiliation of the use of force, however slight. In Sarah's case, I was confused. She had been friendly in a completely non-flirtatious way. Did she or did she not want to be kissed? To my chagrin, I found myself back in my teens. I found myself slowly reducing the distance between my face and hers, watching for the first sign for a clear go-ahead or a pullback. For a while, I thought I'd make it. But then she pulled back, sharply, and without any sign of coyness or disapproval. It was a matter of sheer fright. "Darius!" she cried out in a strangled scream. I suppose I was more wrapped up in the game than she had been. She noticed, and I never would have. It is somewhat more soothing to my ego to put it this way, though. She was facing in the right direction, and I wasn't. I turned quickly and was on my feet. "What the hell do you want?" I demanded. He was some 15 feet away, as best I could judge in the dimness, but I could tell nothing about him but that he was a man, a white man, moderately tall and stocky. He had on a dark jacket, dark shirt, dark pants, and if it weren't for the pale light on his hands and face, he would have been quite invisible except as a shadow. "It's the man from the restaurant," said Sarah in agitation. "You can't tell," I whispered, never taking my eyes from him. "The same shape, the same something, I'm sure." "What do you want?" I shouted again. They might hear me in the street, but I had no great hopes of any hero dashing in to protect us. Everyone would hurry past, pretending not to hear. "Don't move," I said. But the shape was moving, with small steps, and now there was light glinting more efficiently in a new place. Sarah whispered, "He has a knife." I didn't need to be told that. I said, "Do you want money?" There was no answer, and I could wait no longer. I pushed Sarah roughly to one side. "Stand clear," I said in a low voice. "If we start fighting, run." I stepped back onto the grass, putting the bench between us for just a moment while I kept my eyes on him and weighed the situation. At least he didn't have a gun, or wasn't using it if he had one, with which to shoot me down from a safe distance. But then a quiet killing would give him a longer time to get away. I was sure it was a killing that was intended. A funny thing. You meet and know so many men in your life, so many women, so many names. And then you may meet one person whose interaction with you is the most intimate of all, killer and killed, and you don't know him at all. All the names of your life trickle by one, and the whole thing ends at last with Anonymous. Gingerly, Anonymous was circling the bench to get at me. He wasn't going to throw the knife, I was sure. Throwing a knife is something that requires more skill than you might think, and very few have it, and if your knife misses, you are left unarmed. I backed as gingerly away, but let him get round the bench. I knew what I would try to do, and I wanted the empty space between us. I said, in as near to an ordinary speaking voice as I could manage, "Just move behind him, Sarah." I knew she wouldn't move. How could she? She was probably frozen in terror, helpless, or running away, perhaps, though I had heard no rustling of grass, no cries. I was sure Anonymous would know she wouldn't move, but people are human. However completely the man with the knife knew there would be no one moving toward his rear, his eyes would have to flick in the direction of Sarah, and it was for that moment of inattention that I waited. With a loud cry, I lunged forward, my right foot shooting out straight for his testicles. I was well out of range. He had the knife, after all, and I couldn't have trusted the accuracy of my thrust anyway, so I had neither the hope nor even the intention of scoring a bullseye. It is, however, difficult to control the reaction when a foot darts out toward that delicate region, particularly when an unexpected scream accompanies the move. Anonymous bent his hips backward, quite without conscious intention, I'm sure, and his hands shot downward in automatic and quite unpreventable defense. But my right foot lunge became a leap, and I charged with perfect timing. but my right foot lunge became a leap, and I charged with perfect timing. I had practiced this particular form of attack many times, and I was delighted to see it work out so well. It takes much longer to tell than to do. I seized the wrist of the downward-moving, knife-carrying arm, twisted it roughly, and continued its motion, reinforcing it with my own, making it move backward and upward as hard as I could. The knife went flying, as I knew it would, and that arm had to be dislocated at the shoulder from the scream he gave, and he went down. The trouble is, though, that he weighed at least 60 pounds more than I did, and while I could be quick enough and clever enough to pull his arm out of its socket, there was no way I could keep his falling mass from pulling me down with it. I had to let go quickly not to be pinned under him, and I went staggering forward, head first, into a tree. I've got a pretty hard skull, but it won't compare to the trunk of an old, firmly rooted tree, so I saw a lot of pretty colored lights and went down and all but out. I couldn't move for a while. I was almost unable to think, only slow, convoluted thoughts. She had warned me, Sarah, and I hadn't listened. Had she maneuvered me into the park? Conscience twinging, so she warned me. Set up, outfoxed, outplayed, and now I would lie here and he would get up, knife me, other hand, or she would. Darius! It was a scream, and I heard it at last. I could move, and I forced myself to my feet, but my knees felt unhinged, and I found myself clinging to the tree. What? I was dizzy and in pain, and I had difficulty focusing. Sarah was holding the knife in both hands. My eyes were watering, and she seemed to be deep in a fog. What do I do, Darius? She was sitting on the chest of Anonymous. He was thoroughly immobilized, and not because of his dislocated shoulder, either. When my vision cleared a bit, I wasn't surprised that he was, for she was holding the knife just over one of his eyes, virtually making contact. He could easily have rolled away faster than she could move, considering that she was clearly no expert in rough and tumble, but his dislocated shoulder made motion difficult for him, and I could see that he hesitated to risk his eye and the brain behind it. What do I do, Darius? Just hold him like that a minute, I gasped. I'll be there as soon as I can move. If he moves, just stick it in. That's what I said I'd do, but I don't want to. Do it anyway. You can scream while you're doing it. I managed to move and to limp over, feeling as though I would go down at every step. It was 20 steps and maybe 20 years before I got there. I looked down at Anonymous, and he looked sick and sweaty in the dim light, sicker and sweatier than I felt. His arm must have been killing him, and he was staring at a knife point at a distance too close to focus. I tried to memorize his face, which had a blunt, somewhat twisted nose that I would have difficulty forgetting. "Who the hell sent you out to do this?" I asked in a low voice. "You tell me what's going on, or your friends will call you Johnny One-Eye." He tried to talk, but it dawned on me that Sarah was liable to drop the knife any moment she was shaking so hard. I said, "Give me the knife, Sarah," and reached downward. But between my inability to move quickly and Sarah's eagerness to let go, the maneuver went wrong. She didn't wait for me to reach down so that the knife would stay in position as it was transferred. She reached it up to me. Anonymous moved quickly, rolling over onto his good arm, dumping Sarah. He managed to make it to his feet and was staggering away with his good hand grasping the elbow of his dislocated arm long before I could do anything about it. "Let him go," I muttered. "We can't catch him." I looked stupidly at the knife for a moment. It was a switchblade, and I made its point vanish. I dropped it into my pocket. She said, "Aren't we going to the police?" "Why? What do you suppose they'll do, except to go to the trouble of putting down the story and filing it?"
"But when we go to a doctor, we'll have to tell him."
"I don't need a doctor," I said wearily. "I'm perfectly all right. Just got to get home and sleep it off." I was lying, of course. My head hurt as though it were one great big bad tooth.
"But how will you get home?" said Sarah. "Can you make it to the street? We can get a taxi."
"Don't need a taxi," I said. "I'm on home turf, just 2 blocks. Help me a bit and I'll walk it. Just make sure I get to the door, then you can go home. No danger for you, promise." I managed a feeble imitation of a smile, I think.
"Lean on me," she said, paying no attention to what I was saying.
But I couldn't let go. I said, "I'm in no position to endanger your virtue. Sorry about that."
She said, "Oh, shut up. Which direction?"